Peter. How was your run today?
You know what? I'm actually on vacation, so we're not. Do you notice that there's an empty chair in front of you?
Peter, the studio is so dark and incredibly lonely.
I bet you it's cooler, too, without my body temperature in there.
Well, I have a fan blowing directly on me, so it's quite pleasant. But it's not as nice as having the Cape Cod ocean air blowing in through my window, which I can hear where you are. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, every year I come down here for a little getaway week, and I'm in the beautiful Cape Cod, and it's just a place I go to sort of gather my thoughts, and I get some good runs in because the weather, the sea air, there's like nothing better. So I just needed to get away from you.
Well, good riddance, but it's at least good to hear your voice, and I hope everybody else is excited. You have a special guest today?
I do. We're going to be speaking in just a moment with my old friend Dave Avakian, a longtime runner who has quite a few tales to tell us. But first, Brian, I've got to say...
Sir.
Listen to me. Listen. Are you listening?
Yes. Yes, I'm still here.
I did one post on Facebook mentioning my raising funds for Boston's Children's Hospital, because as you know, Brian, I am running the New York City Marathon.
Peter, I think you've mentioned that.
But I put out the clarion call, and boom, bang, before I can even hit send, I'm having money coming to me, to the hospital. Thank you, everyone who has contributed so far. It's a mind blow. I'm always humbled by it. It's going to be an honor to run for every one of you who's given me any time, thoughts, wishes, prayers, and cash. Feel free to keep on giving. This is so wonderful. You can get the link to the site. We'll put it on hwirt.com, but also on Facebook. And again, it's for Boston's Children's Hospital. And I hope to reach my goal well before the race and surpass it. So that's something to look forward to. So thank you, everybody.
Well, that's tremendous, and I'll throw my thanks in there, not only for those of you who are donating to Peter's charity run for the New York City Marathon, but those who helped me achieve my goal of raising money for Brigham and Women's during the BAA 10K. It's so wonderful to have so many great contributions coming in from so many places. Peter, should we start the show?
So, Brian, I'm on vacation, but let me tell you, that's not going to stop me from making high-quality podcasts for everybody.
For free.
It is always free, isn't it?
I haven't paid for one of our podcasts yet. You know, Peter, I can tell from the sound of the room that you're not alone.
So here we are in beautiful Cape Cod, and welcome, please, Mr. David Avakian.
Hello.
David, how are you?
I am doing well.
May we call you Dave?
That'd be better, yeah. Dave's good.
Dave, Brian, Dave.
Hi, Dave. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you, too, Brian.
So we met about 5 or 6 years ago, but we only meet once a year for about a week. So we've only been friends just over a month or so. But it's been an intense courtship, and we've bonded over many things, life, food, family, friends, but mostly a little bit about running.
Yeah. Yes.
Tell me, have you run any races?
Many, many. Countless.
Countless races. Any of the big ones that we should make note of?
Let's see. Like Boston?
Okay.
Would that qualify as a big race?
I qualify that as a big race only because it's the only one I've done.
Okay. Well,
it's not your only race, Peter.
No, but it's the only one that I really, that sticks in my brain.
That you could just say Boston and everybody would know. Oh,
they Boston. Know, oh, you've run Boston. Yeah, that's a real thing.
You're
one
of those.
Yeah.
Boston and Vermont. I don't even have to say the word marathon afterwards.
You don't have to.
Huh. Ocean State.
Nice.
And then half one marathons.
How many times Boston?
5 Bostons.
Wow. Okay.
5 Bostons. Yeah.
What started you running? When did you first start that?
The running... my first exposure to running was I was 7 years old.
Okay.
And Barbara Stewart used to ask me to run up and down the driveway.
Yeah.
And she was 4.
Yeah.
I was 7.
You trying to impress her?
I was. And when I ran up the hill, she clapped. She used to go, yay. And, you know, that from that point forward,
You like people saying yay.
Yeah, and that's what Boston did. Even, like, one of my Bostons I ran really, really slow, like, well over 5 hours, but people still said yay.
So you like that?
Yeah, I like the yay.
Now, to give an understanding, what was your fastest Boston?
About 320, a little under 320.
Wow, and was that your fastest marathon?
Yeah.
Total?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite a range, and you've done it over many, many years.
Yeah, it's like a two-hour range, actually, of from 320 to 520.
Yeah, yeah. But if you think about running and then not running, there's a much bigger range between running and not running.
Yes, yes.
Dave, what does running mean to you? What does it do for you? Why?
It's been a focus, I would say. That's the one word that stands out to me. When I've had good focus, I've been able to keep up with running, but as I lose focus, I don't run as much.
So it helps you line it all up.
Yeah. And it seems like these days I haven't been running, honestly. Yeah. Haven't been running.
Yeah.
Because I lack focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see it as something that's going to come back?
It will.
Yeah. We had been talking just yesterday about, so you ran Boston in 95,
mm-hmm.
and then tell us what happened in 96, which was the 100th anniversary.
Oh, yes. I ran 95 and was looking really forward to doing 1996.
Yeah.
But you couldn't, I didn't do a charity then. I can't remember if they had charities back then.
It certainly wasn't the way it is now.
I don't know. It's right. The only way you were going to get in was qualify, and I didn't qualify.
Yep.
But Runner's World, it was either Runner's World or Running Times.
Okay.
Couldn't remember. Had a lottery, and you sent in your name.
Yep.
And they picked a couple people out of thousands who they would give an invitation to. And I was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's big.
All ready to run the 1996 100th marathon.
That's big.
Yeah. However, I was injured. Yeah.
Just before or during the training?
During the training.
Mm.
Actually, right even before I got the call saying I had the official number, I was injured. But I figured by then, you know, April, I got the call in like October.
Right.
You know, the injury would be fine. But no, it got worse.
So you had to say no thank you.
Yeah, I had to say no thank you.
That's brutal.
That was tough.
When did you make that call?
In February. Yeah. It was a tough call. But had to be done. I ended up, you know, not to get too graphic, but I ended up tearing a hamstring, and then in the midst of trying to get physical therapy for that, tore a nerve and ended up on crutches, and so it was
not good.
Not gonna happen.
And then you were saying you were how many years out were you?
About three.
Mm-hmm.
I think about three.
Yeah. Wow.
And then slowly started to get back going.
Yeah.
And it's been very slow since. But it continues. Even though I've taken, like, sometimes years off.
Yeah.
I still consider myself a runner.
Well, yeah. I think that's right.
I think I'll be, yeah, I could take years and years off, but I'm still a runner.
With all that change, because you had been running every single day.
Yeah.
Was it just therapy? Was it just rehab, or did you replace it with anything? Or?
Well, it started off to be a lot of rehab, and then that kind of, and then I overdid that, because runners overdo everything.
Of course.
I think that's pretty much a
this podcast,
personality trait.
This show has proven that.
That's right. We ignore the pain both in our running and our podcasting.
It's so
true. Yeah, good.
We podcast through
good.
The pain.
That's good. That's it. It's like, this is a marathon. And you're at Heartbreak Hill.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to figure out a way to, or what to spend my time doing.
Yeah.
Instead of running for an hour, hour and a half every day, I had to figure out something else to do during that time. And for some reason, something dawned on me. It's like, I'm going to learn how to play the cello.
The musical instrument.
So I picked up the cello and played that for an hour and a half every day for a few years. So it was, that was a marathon.
Wow.
And I don't know why the cello, but there's something magical about that sound.
It's an obvious transition. I mean, I can see that.
Sure, yeah.
It takes a lot of strength, endurance, strong butt muscles, you know, everything.
Yeah, even when you're not doing well, it doesn't matter. You keep going.
It doesn't matter. You keep going. That's a mind blow. So this is a cautionary tale, Brian. This is what we have to look forward to.
That's right. Look out, fiddle. I'm going to learn you.
Okay, and I'm going to learn the bassoon.
Uh-huh. That's a rare instrument.
Yeah, but I'm the rare kind of runner.
You know what's funny about the bassoon is that you could actually play while you're running. So I think that the lesson here is to learn an instrument that forces you to sit. So I can't do the fiddle either. It would have to be something where you must sit.
Well, you're already a drummer.
Yeah.
You could just get good.
I could actually try to learn how to keep a beat.
That'd be nice.
Dave, so you said you started running at age 7 up your driveway to impress a neighbor. And
yeah.
You ran several Bostons later in life. What happened in between there? Were you a high school runner, college runner?
Oh, yeah. No, I was we had a little running club in junior high.
Really?
Yeah, it's a rare thing, I think, for junior high, especially back then. We used to meet every morning before school in our street clothes, wearing Converse. And mm-hmm. we ran around 2 or 3 miles every day with the math teacher. He was our track coach.
No kidding.
Yeah.
When was this about? Give me a decade.
It was 1972-ish.
So just before the first real running boom.
Yeah, it was before Nike.
So you guys were really oddballs.
We were very much oddballs. You got that right. And I liked that. Something about that I liked.
And what would you wear for clothing? Like just t-shirts and shorts? Or
no, we did. Actually, there were some days that we wore long pants.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because we met at 7:30. We ran for a half hour or so, and then school started.
Right, so you had to go
and
right
there were no...
And you weren't going to shower up or anything?
No, no showers. There wasn't anything available to runners. Right, I mean, maybe to football players there were, but not to runners. So that started the junior high running, and then I ran into high school, cross country, and track, and some in college. And then I took some time off after that.
But then what triggered any kind of distance running?
That happened in high school. We used to do like a 10-mile run in high school, and if you did a 10-mile run, you got a really nice jacket.
Oh,
yeah,
I would do.
I actually still have a jacket.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful jacket.
Does it fit?
It. Well, we can change the subject.
Yeah,
now.
All right. Then.
No. So yeah, I wanted the jacket.
Yeah, the jacket's the best part.
Yeah, that is.
When I did cross country, they didn't have jackets, but we had really great pullover. Heavy hooded sweatshirts,
nice.
With a pocket that you could put your hands all the way through. You know, and it was my prized thing because I was a Brian. This is going to be hard for you to understand, but I was a heavy set kid.
Clyde Army.
So for me to get that as a junior in high school to do cross country and to actually run 6-mile trainings and 3-mile races and get this awesome hooded sweatshirt, it was a badge of honor, and of course. I gave it to a girl.
Oh.
Right? Because I like the applause.
Look, listen to us when we hear that. We're like, oh, no, you didn't.
Because I like the clapping, Dave. I like the clapping.
I can relate.
So the real reason why I wanted to sit down and talk with you is because maybe 3-4 years ago, you told a story to me about an incident while running that involved Mother Nature.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
And I think if you could just set that scene and tell that tale, I think we all will learn a little something.
Okay. I was, this was probably in the 90s, mid-90s, late 90s.
So it's before the big injury?
It was before, actually, right. It was before the big injury.
Okay.
And I was running an 8, plus mile loop every day after work.
Just to shake it out.
Something to look forward to all day.
Okay.
And I never paid attention to the weather.
No.
So I did my 8 mile loop while I was about maybe 6.5 miles into it, and it started to downpour.
Now, where are we in the state, roughly?
Okay, we're in Northampton, Massachusetts.
You familiar with that, Brian?
I've been there many times. Uh-huh. Home of Smith College.
Home of Smith College. Not far from Smith College. So it started to downpour, and I'm like, okay, this is okay. I'm feeling okay.
I like the rain.
And it was because this was summertime.
Sure.
And then I started hearing some thunder.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, thunder, that happens. And then I saw some lightning in the background, and I'm like, well, that happens. And then I remember somebody told me once where the rumor is
you see a flash and then you do the one Mississippi, two Mississippi, yeah. You can get an idea of the distance away. They say it's miles, but really it's more if you can count longer in between the sound and the flash, it means it's getting further away.
Okay.
Or if it's getting tighter, let's say.
Yeah. Well, it was getting tighter.
Oh, it's getting tighter. It's coming
it was getting
you.
Tighter.
Oh, all right. Good to know.
So I was like, wow, it's getting really tight. I mean, I could almost see it and hear it at the same time. Very, very close. So I wasn't sure what to do. I was going by a park, and I had about a mile to go. So I said, I can't remember what they said to do during these times. Do you hide under a tree?
Right.
Or do you try to get shelter?
Right.
Or, I don't know. So I decided, no, I can't stop.
Stay in the road.
Run through it. Run through the pain.
Run through the pain.
So I said, I'm going to run home as fast as I possibly can. So yeah, that seems like the right thing to do. And about 10 feet into that, I felt a jolt, and it actually threw me back about 10 feet or so. It lifted me off the ground.
Whoa.
And I fell back and said, whoa.
Yeah, sure.
Whoa. And at that point, what do?
Stay down?
No.
Get up?
Get up and run really fast home.
Yeah, get out of there.
But, you know, it's interesting. There was a hospital, the Cooley Dickinson Hospital, which is right across the street.
Didn't go?
No, I felt, yeah, no, that wasn't, didn't even seem to be an option. Should you do that to get checked out? Or do you keep running? I shook it off.
I don't know. I mean, so you got bit. You full on got bit.
Yeah.
Did you sustain any injuries?
Depends upon who you ask. My wife would say, yeah, there's definitely some leftover brain damage.
Sure, sure.
You know, some frontal lobe damage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't.
Did you smell funny? Wow. Was there a sensation to it other than, was there a...
Yeah, it was zinging.
Zinging,
yeah.
Well, and how loud was the thunderclap? I mean, it was right on top of you, right?
It was very loud. Yeah.
Wow.
It was like a car crash.
So it was all simultaneous. There was space.
No space.
Did you go back to that spot to see if there was damage to a tree or the ground or anything like
that? That's actually a great question. I never did that.
Hmm.
Why didn't I do that?
We might have to do a field trip.
It's not too late. It could be.
Wow. And yeah. Has that deterred you from going out in the rain or
road? No. Because can you get hit by lightning twice?
I don't know. Can you, Dave?
Sure you can.
How do you know? Do you know that firsthand?
Well, it depends upon how, if you're smart or not.
Let's talk about you.
Okay.
Did you go again?
I went again. I went running again. I never did get hit by lightning while running.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does it find you other times?
Well, I was cleaning my wood stove. And it was thunder and lightning outside.
Now, how much time, in all seriousness, was between the first event and the second event?
You know, probably a year.
And you were you skittish at all?
No.
So you're cleaning your wood stove.
Cleaning my wood stove.
Not
it was
running.
Thundering, lightning, you, not running.
You probably should have been.
I probably, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And what happened?
And I guess some lightning hit the chimney, then zinged down and hit the metal shovel I was using.
Sure it would. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And threw me back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you switch to oil heat immediately?
Well, not too much longer. I got a pellet stove.
Oh, good.
Much safer.
Yes, they're much safer.
Much safer.
Yeah, you don't have to clean them as much. And...
Wait, so when you got nabbed the second time,
yeah,
were you like, oh, I've been down this road before, I know what this is? Or was this a more severe, less severe, different?
It was less severe.
Less?
Yeah.
So the outdoor severe. One was really
the
hard.
The outdoor one was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I had the chimney to separate me, I think.
To take the chunk of it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I got the aftermath of it.
So I'm going to ask a question that's going to sound familiar. Did you ever go up on the roof and look at the chimney to see if there was any damage?
Sheesh. It's not too late.
Yeah, no, you need to take a minute and actually check that out.
Wow. I live in the same house.
How long ago was that?
That was probably 15 years, not even.
I'm gonna put forth a scientific theory, a premise, and that is lightning strikes reduce curiosity.
Reduce what?
Curiosity in the strikee.
They might take away the interest of finding out
that's
facts.
That's right.
Facts and knowledge.
Or seeking medical attention.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Wow, that is a run of bad luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
No pun intended.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't think any other times. Well, there was one time I was screwing a light bulb in.
Yeah.
But that's minor.
But that's not lightning, though.
No, I just was my own stupidity. Not like these other ones with my stupidity.
You just got electrocuted.
Yeah, that was minor, right.
But so you're screwing the light bulb in and did it break?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it actually, I put my fingers too far close to the socket.
Into the socket while the plug,
that kind of thing. That happens.
Have you ever done the thing where you've broken a light bulb off in the...
try to get it out.
And what do you do? Do you know how to do that?
Should you unplug it?
You definitely should unplug it.
Well, that's the thing.
But you did not.
I forgot about that.
But you know, you can take in all seriousness, you can take a potato and cut it in half.
Yeah, I have heard
And you
that.
Can push it up into the socket and do the unscrewing. Brian, did you know that method?
I'm going to say the only people I know with this sort of reckless attitude toward casual electrocution are electricians.
Sure.
So, Dave, are you a professional electrician?
My father was an electrician.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah, so maybe I was...
So you have it in the genes.
Yeah, thank you.
Dave, what is your vocation when you're not running? What's your career?
Psychotherapy.
Do you love that?
Brain damage from traumatic events.
So now, go with me on
PTSD,
this
PTSD, you know.
Not only do we have Dr. Rebecca Breslow waiting for us in the medical tent, but now we have a psychotherapist to help us through the next chapters of our lives. Do you see what we're doing here on HWRT? We're building a stable of medical professionals to help us.
Peter.
Because we need it.
I'm going to be very serious right now. I know that the two of you are in the room recording this together. If you look out the window and see dark clouds gathering, please get up and run as fast as you can away from Dave, okay? Just run. Leave the equipment and run as far as you can and stay away from chimneys.
There's no chimneys in this motel.
Or light sockets.
Yeah, or light sockets or any power strips or copper tubing.
Those are astonishing, survival stories. If nothing else, Dave, I don't even know if I could get up out of bed and walk out of the house the next morning, much less go running in the scenes of the crime or use my wood stove again. But I actually have a question going back to a comment you made before this, which was you did a lot of running early in the running revolution in the 70s and 80s. And then you said you've taken from time for injuries or other reasons, you've taken significant amounts of time off. And you said even having taken a year or more off, you consider yourself a runner. And I only find that interesting, not to dispute it at all, of course, but in that so many people who run now are hesitant to call themselves runners unless they've done something like run a marathon or hit 25 miles a week or something like that. And it's sort of, I find it an odd thing that people feel that there's some amorphous definition of a runner that they're not achieving somehow. Have you felt this when you talk to other runners?
Well, you know, right when you say that, I think about the word jog. Like I could never consider myself a jogger, even though I jog right now.
That's a good distinction.
Yeah, I'm not a jogger. I'm a runner, right, even though I can run as slow as I could do a good 13-minute mile, but I'm still running. I'm not jogging. But other people would look and say, "Oh, he's jogging."
Or as my best friend said to me when he saw pictures of me in the marathon, said, "How was your speed walk?"
That was his speed walk.
Because my feet weren't really leaving the asphalt at any one point.
Well, there's the shuffle, too.
There's the shuffle.
I could call myself a shuffler because I look like I'm just shuffling.
But you're a runner shuffler.
But I'm,
not a jogger shuffler.
That's right.
So what is that? Is that a mental classification? Is that a decision you make in your mind?
Somehow it becomes a natural identity.
Yeah.
But
I think Brian's onto something because I've spoken to a lot of people who do run. I would consider themselves runners.
Yeah.
But they won't self-classify that way in any way.
So is it a self-esteem thing?
I think there's this bizarre thing of, well, I've never run a race or I'm not doing it
enough. I'm not doing enough miles or.
But I also think, Brian, and see if you agree with this, I think it's about why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I first started and I was doing it strictly as a weight loss thing, I would never tell you I was a runner. Never in a million years.
Okay.
But then it shifted and it became something else. And I think it happened, and we've talked about this with other people about pushing past the suck, right? You have to get past that two or three or into that fourth mile and you start to realize, oh, no, this is where it is. This is where it starts to feel like something other than this sort of torture that I've been feeling. Because if you only spend your time running 1 or 2 miles, well, maybe it's going to always be awful. But you get into that third mile.
I think.
Go ahead.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, for myself, I think I ran on and off for years, but really to improve or supplement other activities, either just my own physical fitness or playing ultimate frisbee or something like that, you know, to make myself better at that. Whereas, and even running half marathons, I sort of did that as just a proof that I could do it. But it wasn't until I started doing things to improve my running, like, you know, now if I'm doing weight training or something like that, I'm thinking of that as, okay, now this is going to improve my running. So I think maybe that is a shift for me anyway, into where I call myself a runner.
And there's something about it, as we've said before, the deeper you go in terms of distance, and I guess that also means time, and you can choose either really to go deep, I think, depending on pacing. But there's something meditative about it. And I think, Dave, that's what you were saying was it's a place for you to go and focus in.
Yeah.
And unpack stuff or to...
It serves a function.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And sometimes you don't know what the function is because it's a lot of things.
At the same time.
Like you almost can't do anything better for your health than going out and run.
Run it out, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't matter how long or just that you feel when you finish... Something magical has happened.
Dave, can we go back to the cello a little bit? So I'm fascinated by this this connection or this decision to pick up the instrument, which I assume you hadn't played prior to being injured and deciding to...
No, I played the clarinet in fourth grade.
Well, that makes two of us. And I didn't really make it past fourth grade.
I was a French horn kid.
Oh, yeah. I could see it.
Just wanted to put that
the French horn and the bassoon.
You see where I'm going.
There's a theme here. So,
what's next, the theremin? So I was going to say, did you feel the same psychological effects, after practicing the cello every day for an hour and a half? Because that's a lot more mental activity, whereas running is, it's mental, but it's really very physical.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got a lot of the similar effects out of it, at least psychologically. Physically, no.
Well, sure, but you know, when you're running, you're not also reading music or doing anything more interesting with your hands or anything than just, you know, moving them back and forth and lifting one leg and lifting another. Whereas when you're playing an instrument, you're doing a lot.
You know, that reminds, it's a good point, because I was thinking of playing the cello, but I would never call myself a cellist.
You were a jogger cellist.
I was a jogger. Yeah. That's
right? You were just jogging. Yeah.
I played the cello, but I'm not a cellist.
Well, that's interesting. And you ended up keeping the cello? You still do it? Or no?
No, I don't. No, I ended up selling it because children happened. I can blame them.
You can either be a cellist or a family person. Yeah. Can't be both.
Can't be both.
No, you can't be both.
But now that they're getting older, there still are cellos out there.
Are you going to wheel that cello back in? What do you think you're going to do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe something smaller.
Smaller?
Just portable.
Yeah, something more portable. That is kind of big.
Can you play the guitar?
Yeah, I can pick a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a ukulele?
But I'm not a guitarist.
Are you a banjo guy?
I'm not a banjoist, no. A banjoist.
A banjoist. I like banjoist. Is that it? Brian, can we get a check on that? Is that banjoist?
Well, I'm not a banjoist, so I don't know.
No.
But maybe something more portable.
Don't do drums.
I don't know.
Don't do drums.
You don't pick up the drums.
Yeah, no. My father was a drummer. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, you don't want that. All right, so what is your advice to anyone out there? Because a lot of our listeners...
As a drummer, I can say you can either be a drummer or a musician, but you can't be both.
Ha!
A drummist.
A lot of our listeners out there, the new to HWIRT, are also new to running. Not everybody who listens is a runner. People who are considering starting it because they hear us talk about it and say, well, these guys are idiots, so I could probably do that.
Yeah, I can be an idiot too.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your, any advice, any sage words?
It's always cool to be a runner.
It's never not cool.
It's never not cool. No matter where you are, you can go out and do as little or as much as you want, and you'll always feel good about it. Every time you come home, you'll never say, gosh, I wish I stayed home and watched TV and smoke a cigarette rather than run that half hour. I don't think you'll say that.
No, in fact, I had a saying early in my training of, you only regret the runs you don't do.
Nice.
Because even the bad runs, you don't regret them.
Yeah.
You learn from them, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have gone to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But, or whatever.
Yeah. But there's many guarantees in the world, but that's a guarantee. You will feel better.
Right.
Afterwards.
Right.
And sometimes during, that's always nice.
That's nice, too. That's the way we feel on the show, too. You only regret the podcast you don't listen to.
I gotcha. Like how you smoothed right into that.
You may not enjoy the podcast while you're listening to it, but afterwards, you'll always be happy that you did.
People are going to look back on this episode and really enjoy it.
They're going to say, boy, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, that's done. Oof, I need a cigarette.
Watch TV.
Well, Dave, I know you got to get back to your vacation.
Oh, yes, the serious vacationing.
Could we do this next year around the same time just to check in?
I'll be here.
To see where we are. I'll be here. You know I will be. And Brian, I don't know if you'll still be involved with the show.
I may move on to the jogging podcast.
Oh, no. We'll try to get you back.
The jogging cellist podcast you're going to start?
That's a niche market.
Hey! This has been episode 38 of How Was Your Run Today? With me, Peter Villa.
And Brian Gould.
And our special guest, Dave Avakian.
Music by Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence. Listeners, please contribute to the show with your questions and comments. For email and social media links, go to our website, howisyourruntoday.com. Listen to us every week wherever you collect podcasts. Peter keeps his in a seaside motel room. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked. And if you love HWIRT, please share our posts on social media. It's free and it's easier than running through 1.21 gigawatts of electricity. Hey, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Have a safe run today?
I will do a clean 4 miles, I promise you, in only open sunshine, not a cloud in the sky.
That's a verbal, and I'll hold you to it.
And what did you have for breakfast?
A bagel thin.
What was on it?
Butter.
Just butter?
Butter.